Good morning, all you Tri Geeks. This is Zen in the Art of Triathlon. I'm Brett Blankner, and this is a show where you get all the icky on the sticky about how to be quickie, how to not only do triathlons, but how to be a triathlete, live the lifestyle. And I am driving to swim practice early in the morning, late again. It drives me freaking nuts that I'm late. But it's 6 a.m. on Thursday morning, and I'm going to the city pool, City of Bryan pool. And we've got a lot of things to talk about, but first we should give a shout out to our sponsor, www.businessthoughtsblog.com, which is K. Todd Storch's blog all about business and triathlon, all kinds of good stuff like that. He's a triathlete, so definitely check it out. And I'm waiting on a car to go. Come on, car. Thank you. All right. So, sorry, I was at an intersection. We just had a cold front come through last night, so it's a little bit cooler. It's in the 50s. I had a warm spell recently. It's been in the 80s and 70s in the morning and 80s, upper 80s in the afternoons. So anyway, today's show, I'm going to finally play for you the interview with Chris, who is a ultra runner, and gonna have that in just a few minutes. I interviewed him outside of the very pool I'm going to, like a couple weeks ago. And also wanted to talk to you about our first episode of Zen Tri TV, which we filmed 6 o'clock, which we filmed last night. And lastly, I'm gonna talk a little bit about some listener emails that I got in. And I guess the best way, instead of responding to them, is just to talk about it on the air. So, let's talk a little bit about Zen Tri TV. We filmed our first episode last night, and it was just awesome, man. We basically filmed the representative from Giant Bicycles coming in and teaching the store staff at Aggieland Cycles all about their bikes. And the presentation was about an hour and a half long. And what we're going to do is trim it down to be about maybe 20 minutes if we can, all the important stuff. And the rep was very, very excited about us filming him. He thought it was really cool. Because I told him basically it's targeted marketing in a way towards triathletes if it gets on this show and cyclists. So the presentation had a lot to do with the history of cycling, well, the history of Giant. And a lot about the different materials for the frames, the different frame geometries, and trying to think of what else. We went over a trainer, a bike trainer, and also I pulled a tri bike off the wall and had him go over what's special about it, and versus, you know, and also what's coming out next year with Giant Bicycles, and as far as tri bikes go. The most interesting thing is that they are pretty much discontinuing the lower end, the lower price. I would not say it's a lower end bike. I guess it's lower end. I don't know. But it's the $1,200, $1,600 price point bikes, which are aluminum frame tri bikes, and they're going to carbon fiber and some other materials, and they're going to be very expensive. They're going to be very nice, very expensive. They're time trial bikes. Let's see, 3,000 something and 5,000 and something for these new aero bikes that they're going to be coming out with. The interesting thing is they're not going to be exactly tri bikes. They're going to have, I think, 75 degree seat angle, and of course, you know, all you have to do is move your seat and you can change that seat angle, but a lot of people prefer to have 78 degree seat angle. So, if you know of a Giant bicycle that you like, that's a tri bike that's sitting in your bike shop, and it's this year's model, it's aluminum, you may want to snatch it up if that's what you want as a Giant, because they're not going to be making them anymore at that price point. But anyway, we went over the whole thing. Basically, he's teaching the store staff everything about Giant bicycles so that they can turn around and tell the customers And he was trying to promote the philosophy of Giant that, you know, they're there to ride, or they're there to ride. They want you to ride and enjoy the ride, and they want the salespeople to ask you, you know, why do you want to ride a bike, and then sell the proper bike to the person that's trying to ride. And they're trying to cover all their bases with all product lines. Giant is the biggest bicycle manufacturer in the world. And they made, maybe even still do, make bicycle frames for Specialized and a whole bunch of other companies. They're upper echelon carbon fiber materials. I think he said it was T9000 or T8000. We'll have it on video. The only other purpose for it is for military. I think he said that they're the only company that uses it. They don't use any lugs in their carbon. I mean, it's just fascinating, all this stuff. Because they build their bikes from bottom up, like all the materials themselves. They get all the materials themselves. They don't outsource anything. They make the carbon fiber tubing themselves. They make the aluminum themselves. Things, you'd be surprised to learn this, but if you outsource your bike building to somebody else and they were using aluminum tubing, aluminum tubing is butted. I mean, it's thicker at the ends than in the middle. A bike builder could order just a whole bunch of these tubes, and then when they build different size frames, the tubing isn't exactly the right length. The butting doesn't start at the right spot for the shorter frames, for example, and then the butting isn't customized for that size frame. And because Giant Bicycles makes their own materials from in-house, they don't have that kind of problem. So it's just really fascinating. We're going to try to cover as much of it as we can on video. If anybody has any questions about Giant Bicycles, man, ask me. Now, I'm not promoting Giant Bicycles, you know, to go out and buy. You definitely need to buy the bike that fits you. That's the most important thing. Than anything else, you need to sit on a whole bunch of different bikes. But it is really, really cool to listen to the pitch and the instructional, really, on Giant Bicycles, so you really know everything about them. So if I know somebody that's looking at buying a Giant, I can tell them exactly, you know, what to look for, the difference between the geometries and stuff like that. And so definitely get excited about this video. It's going to be really, really cool. You're going to learn a lot about not just Giant, well, pretty much just about Giant, I guess, but how bicycles are made and their viewpoint on things. It's really, really cool. So Rod, the bike store owner, was really excited about us filming this, and so was the guy at Giant Bicycles. And then Rod said, after we were finishing up, that the guy from Specialized is going to be coming soon, and maybe we could do the same thing for Specialized. And I said, oh yeah, sure, absolutely, we'll definitely do that. And let's see, I have a short list of things to talk about on that. Like I said, we did the video for you guys so that you'll know everything about Giant Bicycles, so that if you're buying a bike, you know, you'll know what you're picking. There's like two different levels of aluminum and stuff like that. We're going to get all that on the show. We also covered him talking about a trainer, you know, a wind trainer. And there's actually, if this doesn't make the video, there's actually two different types of magnetic resistance. There's magnetic resistance, which is linear, and then there's magnetic resistance, which is progressive, and the progressive is more expensive, it's better. And on the video, we've got the progressive, and it's like $200-something. And yeah, we had him pull down the tri bike. Oh, so when he pulled up, I noticed he was driving a Subaru Baja with a bike in the back. And then when we were filming and stuff like that, and we finished up, I said to Professor Erich, I'm like, man, let's look at his bike. What has he got? And he was still in the store. It's pitch black outside. And so we go out and we start looking at his bike. And of course, man, he has the top secret, top of the line, super duper duper, you know, Uber bike that Giant makes, and it's freaking sweet. And it was mounted on a fork mount in his truck, the Subaru Baja bed. And also, what he would do is he was giving out information about Giant Bicycles, and you know the whole store staff was there. So there's like maybe 10 of us total there. He was asking questions, you know. So which bike line does this? You know, what is the suspension called in this bike? You know, like a mountain bike. And we were all shouting out answers because he was giving away free stuff. And he, Rich, and I both got T-shirts and a beer bottle opener that's shaped like a rear cog, or it's actually made out of a rear cog. It's really cool. So we scored some swag. And let's see. I guess that's it about Giant. Yeah, it was just really great. It's gonna make great video. I like making video only if it's pertinent for people to see, so you know, help clarify the subject. And this was definitely a really good example of that. And so E-Rich is gonna edit the video, and then we're gonna put it out probably next podcast. So next, I'd like to talk a little bit about the listener emails that I've gotten in, and specifically one from Jeremy. And let's see, what did he ask? Turn on the light in the car. You know, it's pitch black outside. I can't see my nose. Oh, Jeremy was talking about strength training. He wanted to know about strength training and total immersion. And I'll talk about strength training now, and then after I get out of the pool, because I got to swim, I'll talk about total immersion. Okay, a long time ago, when I was really a competitive swimmer, that's pretty much all I did was swim and strength training, and I was fast, man, because of the strength training. And I did more strength training than the average swimmer did, average high school swimmer. And that's because I went to military school for a couple of years, and we were all psycho about being, you know, buff and all that other stuff. So we lifted tons of weights. It's kind of like prison, you know. Guys working out in the yard. And so what I did was lots of triceps, where you push down on a little, like a floating bar, kind of push down, focus right on the triceps. And I did butterfly, the butterfly machine, which is kind of like bench press, but where you bring your elbows together repeatedly. I did pull downs, like behind my neck and in front of my neck. And that works your abs too. In fact, the tricep thing works your abs really well too. And I'm trying to think what else. Did some biceps. Did some shoulder shrugs. Things like that. And another important thing is I focused on, because swimming is a high rep sport, instead of doing 6 to 12 reps, like what a lot of weightlifting teaches you to do, I did 15 to 20 reps. And then you know, it's a little bit higher rep, and because that simulates swimming a little bit more. And I did not two sets. I did at least 3, sometimes 4 sets, sometimes 5. And what I found was it made me incredibly strong at swimming, and also tones up your muscles to do the higher rep. Tones up your muscles really, really well. And I don't really do that much anymore. I guess that's one of the psychological aspects of getting burnt out on something. I used to just lift weights tons and tons and tons, and I used to think it was so important to be big and bulky and badass, I guess. And now I'm really into slim and trim and trying to be lightweight and fast. And I probably overdo it in that direction. I don't do enough. Personally, I don't do enough weight training. I just can't find time for it. So what I'm doing right now that simulates weight training is rock climbing. And, you know, if you've been listening to the show at all over the past few months, you can tell I've gotten really into rock climbing. And I think it's really, really good because you're basically doing pull-ups the whole time. And after I do a day of rock climbing, or half an hour of rock climbing, the next day I go swimming and it hurts so bad, and which tells me that, you know, I'm working the same muscle group. And you know, it's basically lifting weights in a way. You're doing, you do triceps and definitely do biceps with it. Lots of forearm work, balance, and chest and back, and delts, actually your deltoids, a lot, which, you know, in the water, you're basically pulling yourself along, and that's the same thing. On the wall, you're basically pulling yourself up. It's just fun, you know. So, and that's one of the things that we always try to talk about, is try to make your workouts fun. So I'm pulling into the driveway for the swimming pool, and after I get out of the water, I'll tell you a little bit about what we did in swim practice, and I'll also cover total immersion swimming, because while I do think it's really good, I do think it's good, and I think people should try it, I guess, there is one flaw with it, one very, very important flaw that I want to cover. So here we go. Turn into the parking lot. I'll be back in just a minute. All right, guys, I'm back. Just swam with the team. Hopped in. That was an emergency brake. They'd already been going for at least half an hour. And I swam for 40 minutes with them and started off immediately with doing the 5 200s on a 3 minute interval, and then 5 100s on a 1:30 interval, and then back to the 5 200s on a 3 minute interval. And that's pretty, it's really fast paced, but that's what you do when you swim with a swim team. So back to total immersion. The one problem I find with total immersion is that in a triathlon swimming, in a triathlon, you have to constantly sight in front of you above the waterline to see where you're going, and total immersion is the exact opposite of that. But I was talking to Coach Virgil, and I asked him what he thought of total immersion swimming, and he loves it. He says it's really, really good, that it reduces your drag on the front really well, and it's great. He thinks it's the best thing. So he and I talked about it for a few minutes, and kind of came to the conclusion that for triathlon, you would do total immersion swimming, but periodically practice sighting while you're swimming in the pool. Just practice popping your head up and looking to try to get a good mix of the two. And also swim, even with your head down, swim with your eyes facing forward, as far forward as you possibly can. So looking up as far as you can, but your head down. And really, that's about it. There's also something to be said for if you're already a swimmer and you've been swimming a long time, your fastest swim stroke is going to be what you already do. It's really hard to change. So I was practicing the different strokes today. I tried total immersion, and then I tried my old way of swimming, which is more, quite a bit more head up, facing forward. And I'm faster swimming facing forward, but that's because that's what I've done all these years. So I was talking to a cycling expert and asking him about crank arm length one time, and he said that studies show that you're going to be fastest on whatever crank arm length you train with. So things like that. So there's always something to be said for experience. All right, let's move on to the interview with Chris. Like I said, I interviewed him while I was sitting out in front of the pool one day when it was closed. I traveled all the way to the pool to go swim, and it was shut down for a swim meet. And Chris was sitting there, so I asked him about long distance running. It's really interesting. So here you go. Okay, so I'm sitting here with Chris, and he's a longtime running friend of mine, and actually taught me how to run, basically, and then screwed me all up. By turning me towards barefoot running. But anyway, and we're sitting outside the Bryan Aquatic Center because I can't go swim because they're having a swim meet of all things. So I'm really pissed off because that was my deal today, man. I was going to go swim. And I pulled into the parking lot, and standing here was Chris. Weird.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of weird.
So Chris is a guy I talk about every once in a while that I needed to interview because he is a distance runner, or off and on he's a distance runner. He proclaims right now that he's not running, which is a point of view that you can take after you've run plenty and you're ready to take a break for a while.
So that's always a good thing to remember, is we can always take a break from it and then come back when we feel better.
That's right. You got to give your legs a break.
So Chris was telling me, what was it, like a couple months ago that you started training with this coach and he told you how to slow down?
Yeah, I started training with a coach out of San Antonio, Joe Sulak of Peak Fitness. And he has me actually running slower and running by heart rate to increase my speed. And it actually does work. I've been running by heart rate, using a heart rate monitor, and all my runs are done in the aerobic level, unless I'm on the track doing speed work.
Okay, and what's your age and your heart rate?
My age is 41. Resting heart rate is varies between 48 and 52, and max is around 195.
What's the heart rate that he was telling you to run at?
My aerobic threshold is 168.
Okay. Just to run below that?
Run below that.
You were running above 168?
Most of the time. That was my problem.
Yeah.
That was my problem. I was training in the anaerobic zone too much, and that's where all my injuries started coming from.
So where were you, at that pace, what was your pace at that heart rate?
At above the aerobic zone?
Yeah, when you were doing it in the anaerobic.
Depending on what distance I was running, you know, I guess a few years ago I was running probably 8 minute miles for, you know, half marathon.
Yeah.
Nothing blistering, but, you know, not too bad.
Yeah.
Considering I'd never really trained for any of this stuff.
Right. And then, so now you're running at a lower rate. And mm-hmm. What did you find? You told me something about going to the track and then testing yourself, and the results were very interesting.
Well, when you sign on with Joe as your coach, what first thing he has you do is first he'll test your anaerobic threshold
mm-hmm.
to see where you're at, get your heart rates. Then he'll have you go to the track field and do a six-minute test. After a warm-up. And what you do is you run as far as you can run in 6 minutes. And then what he does with that number is he bases your track workouts on that. 11 weeks into the program, or starting the program, I ran a 7:40 mile. That was my pace. 11 weeks later, it was a 7:20 mile. 11 weeks later, I was at a 6:40 mile. So, you know, I increased quite a bit, and my aerobic threshold also raised a few beats.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the goal, is to raise your aerobic threshold so you can do most of your long runs in the aerobic level.
Okay. And you found that you were getting injured a lot by running too hard?
Right. Beforehand, I wasn't able to recover because I was always pushing my body to the max on every run.
Yeah.
Which is using, you know, more energy and it's just causing more injuries overall. So now, slowing down, I don't put as much pressure on my body. It's able to recover faster.
Okay.
So it's helped me quite a bit. So now I can go out and run, you know, 25, 30 miles pretty easily. And beforehand it was a struggle.
All by doing it slower.
All by doing it, I saw that look on your face.
It's so interesting.
Yeah, all by doing it slower. It really doesn't make sense when you talk about it to run faster, you slow down. But what I'm doing is I'm getting quality workouts in. I'm still doing speed work on the track, but all my other runs are done in the aerobic level. So so 1 week, you know, a typical week would be hit the track one day, do my speed work, do a 30 to 45 minute run mm-hmm. in the aerobic level. Then one other day, do a tempo run where you start in the aerobic level, you pick it up in the middle, kind of go aerobic or anaerobic, and then pull it back down for a cool down. And then you do a long run on the weekend.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, I'm also hitting the gym and lifting weights, which has made a big difference too.
So the cool thing that you do is you're really big into trail running.
Right.
And in the Austin, San Antonio, Hill Country area. And you also do lots of run support, like race support.
Right, right. And that's, you know, last couple of years when I was injured, I couldn't run, so I had to do something. And I would go and volunteer at all the races, and and help out, and I found that I actually like it just as much as I do participate.
Because you have to run everywhere.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're up, you know, the last race I worked was actually this last weekend down in Huntsville State Park, and one race I worked last year down in Bandera, I was up for 40 hours straight. And, you know, what I like about it is you're helping people reach their goals. You're doing something for them and helping them, and you're giving back to the sport. And it's a good feeling. It really does help. So
so what's your favorite race venue or trail even, and why?
I guess it would have to be Hill Country State Natural Area in Bandera. And I guess part of the reason is it's so remote and it's so rough.
Yeah.
I like the rough trails. Another good one would be Guadalupe Mountains National Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's
remote.
That's really remote. I mean, you don't have anything out there, so that one's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, thanks, Chris.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Later.
All right. Hey, thanks, Chris. Chris has been waiting for me to put this on the air. He said he's been listening to the shows, waiting to hear it, and he's very interested in any kind of responses. So if you have any questions about Chris or his coach or anything to do with distance running, you can send the email to me and I'll forward it on to him, and I guarantee you he'd love to talk with you about it. So again, my email is texifornia@gmail.com, and you can always check me out at the blog at zentri.blogspot.com. So I think that's it. I'm going to wrap up the show. Hope you enjoyed it, and keep your eyes open for this Zentri TV. It's going to be great. And that's it, guys. Keep training. Try to follow your training schedule in and out, you know, through the weeks, and try to make it something you can consistently do. I missed Monday. Of course, Monday's my rest day anyway. But then Tuesday, I wasn't able to work out due to some circumstances. And now I'm back on track with swimming in the morning and then doing spin class at lunch. And this will be my second day of doing that. And it's killer, man. I'm about to die. So that's it. I'll check y'all later. Bye.
Ooh, you're listening to the Triathlete's Garage, you big workout stud.
What are you going to do now if you can't swim?
I've always got my running shoes with me, but I didn't bring any running clothes.
What were you going to swim in?
Speedo.
Oh, you don't want to run in that on the track.
No.
Yeah, we're going to go down to the track and do
not around the high school. Speedo, I'd be arrested.